everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 285. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What a fun show we have for you this week. We must get started with our guest. If you are talking about pioneers in the world of comics, then you most certainly need to be talking about our guest this week, Jeff Krell. Jeff created the groundbreaking comic strip, Jason, which debuted in the Philadelphia Gay News in 1983. By 1985, Jason had achieved national prominence in gay comics, where the strip was named Most Popular Feature. Jason then became a staple in Leyland Publications' Meet Men series of gay male comics anthologies, gracing nearly 20 volumes. In 1990, Jason debuted in national syndication. In 2008, on the eve of Jason's 25th anniversary in comics, Jeff unveiled Jason Goes to Hollywood, an original graphic novel that received the full 5 Tonys, which is the highest rating from Tony Isabella's in Comic Buyer's Guide, and it received 2 nominations for the CBG Fan Awards for Best Writer and Best Graphic Novel of 2008. Jason is about to have a Christmas adventure, and we're going to talk all about it. But first, Jeff Krell, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It's such a thrill to have you. I love talking about comics, so this is going to be such a treat. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
I love to talk about comics.
Well, let's start there. As we would ask all of our guests who use their voices in such unique ways, and you certainly are doing this, why the world of comics to get your voice out there?
Oh, well, I grew up loving comics, reading comics, especially Archie comics. Later, maybe some superheroes, but I love the funny. I always wanted to work for Archie, and when they repeatedly turned me down, I decided I wanted to tell my own story in the same style, and that's really how Jason was born, on Christmas Day in 1982. You see how we do the Christmas theme from beginning to end?
Do we close the interview now? But I think we have more to talk about, right?
No, we're going to get to the end.
Okay, I gotcha.
We're just at the beginning.
Talk to me about what you were drawing before you drew Jason for the first time. Are there some early comics that we can find?
Oh, my. You can find them in my file cabinet.
Okay.
I drew comic books in elementary school through high school. Started off just doing pencils and then started inking things with a ballpoint pen, of all things. And eventually learned how to find my way to the art store and learn how to do it like a professional. But I drew comics throughout my school years, and I put myself and my friends in them and told fictionalized adventures of them. My earliest works were called Susan and Jeffrey Comics.
Look at that. Now, where is Susan these days?
Where is Susan? Susan got a master's in divinity.
Nice. She did. Well, that's very exciting. That's very exciting. So let's fast forward. We'll fast forward to 1983, but obviously there was much that led up to it. How would you even describe for our listening audience where Jason came from?
Jason came from my head and my hand and came from my life. What happened was I graduated from college in 1982. I was the first person in my family to do so. And so I didn't really get a lot of good advice about a major.
Okay.
I thought, naively, that you studied what interested you and then there was a job waiting for you at the other end.
Does it not work like that? I hope it works like that.
Not quite. I did actually get what I thought was a job. It lasted 3 weeks. It turned out to be a complete sham.
Oh.
And I ended up working for a printer in the heart of the ghetto of Philadelphia.
Okay.
Doing layout and paste-up with my Ivy League degree.
Nice.
And I was so frustrated that I started pouring it into what became the Jason comic strip. Because I had a couple of friends who were in the same boat, including my best friend from college, whose name is Andrea, and she was the inspiration for Jason's best friend in the strip, Arena Stage. So we never lived together, but I imagined that we did. I just thought it was actually easier to tell a story if you didn't have to keep going over to each other's places.
Right.
And she actually did live above Dirty Frank's Bar at 13th and Pine in Philadelphia.
Look
so
at
that's
that.
Where I set the strip.
What were your goals when you first started drawing the strip?
It was therapy.
Yeah.
I mean, of course I wanted to get published. I wanted other people to enjoy what I was doing. But it was born of frustration. And on Christmas Day, I was visiting my parents, and I just, you know, told this very fictionalized story of my fabulous life in Philadelphia as a college graduate with a new job. Little did they know. And I went into the basement just as I had when I was young, and I started pouring it out into what became a comic strip. And so I did one with Andrea and myself, and I did one about my ex-lover and boyfriend, I guess. He was a very good lover. And I thought, I'm on to something. I'm enjoying this, and it's the first time I've enjoyed something in a while. And so I took these pencil sketches and ideas and back to Philadelphia and inked the first one and thought, well, this could go somewhere and I should try to find a home for it.
And thus the Philadelphia Gay News, which, you know,
well,
there are any number.
We got there.
You got there.
Place. I tried.
Where was before there?
Well, of course, I had high aspirations, so I thought, well, start at the top. The only place I knew that was running gay cartoons at the time was the back page of The Advocate.
Oh, wow.
So my strip originally was a 12-panel strip. It was 3x4 down. I thought that'll fit on a magazine page really nicely.
Yeah.
And so the first of the strips that I penciled and drew, inked, lettered by hand, put Zip-A-Tone on it in the old days, was one in which Jason and Walter are getting ready to go out, even though they're no longer a couple, because Walter has taken up with Stephen, who's not old enough to get into the bars. And this was kind of based on a true story. So I drew up this 12-panel strip, and I sent it off with high hopes to The Advocate, and I never heard back.
Ah. I don't like that story. I like the part where The Advocate writes you back and says, you know what, we want you at the back of our magazine every issue.
Well, you know what, everything happens for a reason. And in this case, the reason was I was meant to start the strip differently. Well, after I didn't hear from them for months and months, I decided that the Philadelphia Gay News was local. It didn't have a comic strip. Maybe they wanted one that was locally generated. So I scheduled a meeting with the publisher, showed it to him. He liked what I was doing. I had also I'd drawn up the second strip by then, which was another 12-panel strip with Jason and Arena. Her name was AJ back then. Here's some trivia for you.
Look at that.
My friend's name was Andrea Jartman, and she's very proud of the fact that she inspired this character. And sometimes she called herself AJ, and so I did that as well. And what turned out, I don't know, how old are you?
I'm 37. Give or take. So give or take 37.
Okay. So you may not remember this, and maybe it was a Northeastern phenomenon. And I'll bring this up now because it comes back to haunt me later. The lesbian community in Philadelphia was essentially a lesbian separatist community.
Okay.
And pre-AIDS, really, gay men and lesbians lived in two different universes anyway. But it was particularly pronounced in Philadelphia, where to be a lesbian was to be a lesbian separatist. And so they hated men, all men, including gay men. They needed their space, and men were the enemy. And they hated their feminine names. And so all the lesbian separatists in Philadelphia used their initials. In fact, one of the ones I went to Penn with was named, this is a great comic book name, but it's a true story, it's a real name. Her name was T.J. Grubbs.
That's a classic name.
Yeah, I'm going to use it someday. But I started this strip, and the core of it became Jason and AJ, because they lived together.
Okay.
And later on, I discovered there wasn't that much you could do with an ex-lover, and we'll talk about how Walter ended up on the back burner for a long time. But people thought that AJ was a lesbian, because her name was AJ, and the characters didn't and don't have much of a sex life, so... And I didn't want to, like, throw men on top of her just to say, wait, she's straight.
Right.
So, I mean, I always spelled that out in the strip. She was what we used to call a fag hag.
Yeah.
Apparently you can't use those terms anymore, but this was 1983. So after a year of doing the strip, My other best friend who inspired Robin Ricketts, and we'll get to him too.
Oh, yeah.
Who lived in the D.C. area. If you've read my strip long enough, you know that I'm a huge Barry Manilow fan, especially in the old days. I used to mention him a lot. So I went down to D.C. to go to see a Barry Manilow concert with the inspiration for Robin Ricketts, whose name is Tim Gallagher. And we got there, we sat down, I'm reading the program, and there were some advertisements for other events that were happening, and one of them was taking place at the Arena Stage.
Oh.
And I said, that's her name.
That's her name.
And that's how she became Arena Stage. And when I reprinted the old strips, I went back and I cut the word arena and pasted it over AJ.
I love it.
Now we can do that in Photoshop.
Yes, it's a little bit easier now. Look at that backstory that we just got.
It's come full circle.
I love it.
So I drew up these two strips, with one with Jason and Walter, his ex, who is based on someone named Scott, hence Sir Walter Scott is where he became known as Walter.
Okay.
And one with Jason and AJ, and I trotted them off to the Philadelphia Gay News and met with Mark Siegel, who was and remains the publisher of the Philadelphia Gay News, which is going to celebrate its 40th anniversary in 2016.
Amazing. Amazing.
So he looked at it. He thought I was on the right track. He liked it. He liked the idea of running a local strip, and he said he only wanted to run six panels. So he took that first Walter strip and ran the first six panels. And I said, but it doesn't have an ending. And he said, it's fine. Thus, Jason was born.
There he was. Well, I was reading these amazing reviews, and you know, look, people have been reading Jason for so long, and I'm particularly intrigued by reviewers, people who are fans of yours, contrasting what you were doing in the 80s and what you were doing in the 90s. How would you describe the difference between Jason in the 80s and Jason in the 90s?
Oh, that's easy. But first of all, let me say that my reviewers in the 80s were scathing. All pre-internet, but I was doing gay all wrong, according to our self-appointed gay leadership.
How was that for you to encounter that feedback?
There were reviews mostly of gay comics, and they went out of their way to sharpen their knives and attack my strip in particular.
Huh.
It's why, in fact, Robert Tripto, who was the editor at the time, his rejoinder was, yes, but it's the most popular strip we have, hence I've declared myself the most popular strip in gay comics.
Yeah.
Because he took a lot of criticism for running my strip. It was retrograde. My characters were vicious stereotypes. And it's like, and bear in mind, they were based on real people. So
right.
It's really, I'm like, you know, have you met them?
Right.
That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
But it also, it gave me the opportunity to do some soul searching. And I hope the strip has become deeper and more resonant and the characters more three-dimensional over time. And I hope my writing has gotten better, because in the early days, to answer your question, in the 80s, the strips were really, first the early ones, many of which will probably never see the light of day again, were just kind of rants because I was so frustrated about my lot in life. Some of them I found fun enough to reprint over the years. But when I started doing stories for gay comics, they were really a slice of life. I was what I would call a good dialogist. I wrote great dialogue. That was arch and funny and vicious. And some people, my fans, looked forward to the catfights between Jason, that Jason would break up between Robin and Arena all the time.
Right.
So there were other people who thought that was just all wrong, and that I was really just skating on the surface of these characters, and that they were just throwing lines at each other, and there was no depth to them. But mostly, you have to understand the landscape at the time in the 80s. What passed for gay comics, there were really just two kinds. There were political comics and there were sex comics. And you really couldn't find a humor comic. It was like we'd been the butt of the joke for so long that we weren't allowed to laugh at ourselves or something.
Yeah.
That's how I see it. So times changed, certainly, but the big thing that changed for me between the 80s and the 90s was Winston Leyland. Who was the publisher of the Meat Men series of gay male comics anthologies. I did the strip in as six-page stories for gay comics for a while, and but concurrent to that, after about 2 years of doing that, Winston Leyland started publishing his series. He published one. The first volume of Meat Men is actually, it has a really nice history of gay comics in it that Jerry Mills, who wrote Poppers, he's no longer with us, but he did an early gay comic strip called Poppers. And he wrote this really long, excellent history of gay comics up until that point. And Winston Leyland, in the about the first volume did so well that he decided to do more, and they did really well for a while, but then he started wanting to experiment with theme volumes.
Okay.
And it was volume 12, I'll never forget it. He said he was going to do a science fiction theme, and up until that point I'd just done whatever I felt like doing, and he published it because he was looking for a balance between the humor comics, the sex comics, and drama. So he came to me in volume 12 and said he wanted to do a science fiction volume, and I said, well, I'll see you in volume 13.
I'll be back later.
Yeah, thanks, but no, I can't do that. It's not what I do, and I really hate science fiction. And he wheedled and pleaded with me to please try my hand at it because I think he'd already committed my 12 pages. I typically did 2 6-page stories. So I thought about it, and in particular I thought about Archie Comics and how it's essentially comedic, but sometimes the stories are dramatic, sometimes they do escapist fantasy adventures, they do science fiction stories. If you trust your characters, you can take them anywhere.
Right.
I realized when I thought about all the different things that the Archie characters have gone through over the years, while essentially remaining who they are and remaining funny.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, okay, what if my characters found themselves in one of those science fiction situations, being who they are and thinking it's absolutely ridiculous? So I got to comment on the whole genre while taking my characters through a story that became known as Jason Visits Planet 69.
Of course he did.
And it also was a little bit of a metaphor for the AIDS crisis.
Okay.
So I accomplished a number of goals with that, but mostly it opened up my storytelling possibilities. At the same time that parallel to that, I was learning other forms of writing. I had taken a sitcom workshop. I had written my first screenplay, and I liked working on those larger canvases. The idea of really plotting out stories and telling well-plotted stories. Stories are structure, I learned from Robert McKee. And that really changed the way I told stories and the length of them, too, opening up this idea of doing these science fiction stories. I did multi-part stories and really required a lot more thought and not just, let's put the characters in a funny situation and stir,
yeah,
which is how I did my early stuff. So the big difference, other than the fact that I would like to think that the art got a little better, one of my early reviews of someone who actually liked what I was trying to write described me as a writer who sort of draws.
How do you feel about that?
It's sort of true.
Okay.
I still don't consider myself, and when I see some of the amazing stuff that people draw, especially now with the advent of Photoshop and the ability for people to just create and color and,
yeah,
and electronically letter and do this amazing work all from their desk, and I'm awed by it, and I feel like, well, this is my little thing I do. My art is in the service of the story, and I can't say it's more than that.
Yeah.
And I've never aspired for it to be more than that. It's not going to hang in museums. For a while I was doing a syndicated version that you mentioned at the top of the show. And you never know what size that's going to be or how small it's going to get reduced to. And so I reduced my art to a series of very simple lines that communicate the story.
Yeah.
Also because I've always had a full-time job in addition to this. And so I'm not painting the Sistine Chapel.
Right.
You know, it has to get done. So the art has always been in the service of the story, but I would like to believe that my line became surer, my characters became better drawn over time. I can see a difference between the 80s and the 90s just in terms of the confidence with which I rendered the characters. The early strips felt much more tentative. But, yeah, was I a writer who sort of drew? Yeah. I'm a writer who sort of draws a little better now. But it's for me, story comes first.
There you go.
There you go. Again, listeners, we are here with artist and storyteller and writer and comic creator Jeff Krell. Talk to me about Jason's relationship with his mother, because that's a significant piece of the whole puzzle.
Jason's mother has had the most significant story arc in all of the years, and did you mention it's 32 now?
I was getting to that. It's unbelievable. It's just so awe-inspiring.
On Christmas Day since I created it, and 31 this month since it was published for the first time.
So exciting.
In November of 1983. Last year I did a big tour called 30 Years of Jason. That was very well received around the country. So Jason's mother... the first time we meet Jason's mother is in the first story I ever did for Gay Comics, which was called Jason Goes Home. And this was after I'd been doing the strip for a year in the Philadelphia Gay News. I bundled up those strips. And because in the meantime, things happen. Things happen for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I acquired a new roommate who was a fan of underground comics.
Okay.
Robert Crumb and Aileen Kominsky. And introduced me to Kitchen Sink Comics and something called Gay Comics. I had no idea that anything other than mainstream comics existed. So I saw another opportunity. And since I wasn't getting paid very much by the Philadelphia Gay News, I thought, well, maybe Gay Comics will reprint my six-page strips and pay me again. So I sent the strips off to the editor, who at that, the editorship had just changed from Howard Cruz to Robert Triptoe.
Okay.
And fortuitously, Robert really got what I was doing and wanted to take the comic book in a more humorous direction. So he started publishing me, and he started publishing Tim Burrella, who did Leonard and Larry, and some other things like that. So it was a nice fit at the right time for me. So he looked at the strips, and he said he liked them, but had I thought about doing stories? And I hadn't, because I just didn't have an outlet until just this moment. But, you know, I grew up on Archie Comics, and I love the six-page stories. I loved when an issue of Archie Comics, you got four, five, or six-page stories in one issue, and they were all incredibly well-crafted. So I said, sure, I'd love to do that. And I had just gotten back from my five-year high school reunion with Andrea. And I thought, well, that's a springboard for a story, because a lot of stuff went down there.
Okay.
And I wrote and drew that story that became Jason Goes Home. And a big part of that story was meeting Jason's family. So, and they were portrayed as the American Gothic, which is pretty close to true. I grew up on the fringes of Pennsylvania Dutch country.
Okay.
We weren't Amish. We did have electricity, but not much more.
So that was your background.
It was. Well, it inspired.
Yeah.
I exaggerated it. I more broadly, I said, well, you know, what if we went all the way to Lancaster County? And they were really Amish, and that's where Jason really came from, and what a journey he took just to get to Philadelphia and get a college education and come out and try to and look forward to jump-starting his life and find out that nobody cared.
Yeah.
And that was really the premise. That was the start of the strip. Here's this kid from a small town who chucks it all and says he's gay and he's coming out and he's moving to the big city and that's going to solve all his problems. And he finds initially that he has no survival skills for city life.
Right.
And
right.
So what happens is that he forms a new kind of family with Arena and with Robin, who ultimately moves next door. And that was and remains the core of the strip.
Yes.
So, in a slightly exaggerated fashion, Jason's family is who we meet in Jason Goes Home in Gay Comics number 6. And they are, they're suspicious of Arena, first of all, although Jason's mother is happy to see that he's with a woman, because she kind of always knew.
Right.
But hoped against hope. A little while later, while still doing the strip for the Philadelphia Gay News, Jason comes out to his parents, which was based on me coming out to my parents and how they reacted, which wasn't well. My mother cried, thought it was her fault. My father thought it was her fault, too.
Okay.
My father said two completely contradictory but predictable things. First, he said it was a choice and I had made the wrong choice.
Right.
And then second, he said that he always knew.
Okay.
Now, how can those two things be true?
I don't think they can be.
I chose in the womb? Well,
right.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But I came out that way. So Jason's mother's journey. what happens at the end of the 80s, and it's the cliffhanger story at the end of the 80s collection that we published in 2005 called Jason Best of the 80s, is Jason is under pressure from Arena and Arena's family, mostly, to marry her. Now, bear in mind, this is not a story I would tell today.
Okay.
And once again, I was doing gay wrong because that was the wrong message. But they were poor, and Arena's parents were dangling all these cash and prizes if Jason would just make an honest woman out of her. And so it looked tempting. Of course, he doesn't go through with it. But what happens when he doesn't is Jason's parents are at the wedding, and of course, kind of like in real life, Jason's father blames his mother, and she ends up on his doorstep because he's thrown her out. He's thrown her to the curb. So Jason's mother is taken in by Jason, Arena, and Robin and becomes part of their family, and she has a renaissance. She needs to become useful, and so she starts working for Robin, who makes pornos.
Right, he does.
And so that's a journey that she takes. And he throws a film premiere that he expects her to attend, and she's sticking to her needlepoint and doesn't really want to go. She says that that's not really her thing. But he insists, and he buys her a fabulous new dress. And it's the start of a transformation. He puts her in this dress, lets her hair down, and says, the art of being fabulous. And she starts to take to this new lifestyle and becomes one of these card-carrying members of PFLAG and starts a new life in Philadelphia and moves down the hall and continues to work for Robin. And the two of them have the most amazing rapport. I was actually thinking about having her eventually reconcile with her husband. Their names are Bertha and Armistice, by the way.
Yes.
And Armistice, I knew someone, a friend of the family when I was growing up, whose name was Armistice because he was born on Armistice Day, I believe.
That's wow. You don't hear that name so much.
A great name.
Yeah.
And one that really would fit someone who was from Amish country.
Yeah.
And Bertha was just, I had a great aunt, Bertha, and it was just a name that always stuck with. But so it was, I thought someday that I would, that Armistice would see the error of his ways and come back to get her. And she would see that he's changed, and she would leave, and I would be back to my troika of the three main characters. But when I put her with Robin in particular, it was comedy gold.
Yeah.
Because she was the only one who would tell it like it was with Robin. She's so plain-spoken that everyone else just sort of either tries to one-up Robin like Arena does, or they walk around eggs on him because they're just so afraid that they'll offend him or he'll lash out, or they just think he's so weird they want to get away. Bertha has, she's grown, and I'll tell you, this is when I wrote that, when she started her transformation, it was really my fantasy of what I wish would happen for my mother.
Look at that.
Now, over time, over the 30-some years since I came out, she really has evolved, certainly not to that degree, but she's certainly become accepting in a way that she wasn't. And in her own quieter way, she's become a lot more like the Bertha we've come to know after her journey.
Okay.
And someone who's very comfortable around gay people. And my mother just turned 88. I was in New York to see her. I was at Comic-Con, and her birthday was the day after Comic-Con. She still lives in Pennsylvania in the same house, and so I had the opportunity to go see her on her birthday, and I really admire her for the journey that she's taken.
I love it. I love hearing that. Oh, it's so great to hear. Well, can we bring it up to the current day? I know that Jason,
sure.
I just watched Jason.
We can fast forward a little.
Yes, we can fast forward a little. I just watched on YouTube, I watched Jason Had a Christmas Party, which was fun.
Okay. Yeah, that was based on a story I did in the 90s, and that was the only story I ever did for Winston Leyland for the Meat Man series that he rejected.
Oh.
And it was one of those stories that I had to write. It just came to me, and I wanted to tell this story, and I drew it, and it's one of my favorite stories. And he rejected it not because it wasn't good, but because it was a Christmas story, and he didn't want to do something that was seasonal.
Okay.
So it never saw the light of day except in my own Christmas letters. I used to do that, but over the years, until I did the first Jason collection. I collected up all the stories from the first 15 years in something called Jason, a New Collection, that was intended to accompany Jason, a New Musical, that we mounted off-Broadway in 1998. And actually, I want to come back to that because I want to finish the journey of the comics.
Please.
That's a whole story unto itself. And I hope that story is going to continue. Because I hope that we'll remount that. But so what happened was after I did the musical, I lost my shirt on that. Everyone said other people's money, but I believed in it. And so I actually took a step away from comics for a while because I had to make a living.
Yeah.
But I missed it, and I got back to it in 2005 in the following way. I had discovered something called Prism Comics, which is a nonprofit that represents LGBT comics creators at comic book conventions, and they have a website. And it rekindled my interest in Jason, and I thought, well, what if I collected up all my old stuff and just to test the waters, see if there's a market, see if anyone still remembers or if there are new readers who didn't even know what I was doing who might find it entertaining. So in 2005, I started a self-publishing business called Ignite Entertainment. Technically, it existed back in 1997 when I published that first collection, but that was the only thing I'd ever done with Jason.
Okay.
Until 2005. I published these two best-ofs called Jason Best of the 80s and Jason Best of the 90s, and they got really great reviews, and they sold well, and it was my entree back into comics. I was able to appear at comic book conventions and have something to sell and something to talk about. The reviews from people who were not alive when these strips first appeared they heartened me. They were very positive, and one reviewer in particular from Fab, I think.
Okay.
I might be wrong on that, but said that this is the one strip from that era that has stood the test of time. It made me feel like I was right for following my instincts and sticking to my guns. And
yeah.
The story I wanted to tell that was character-based and not based on the cardboard political cutouts I was supposed to put up there and say, in case any straight people are reading, this is how we think you should think of us. And I certainly wasn't doing a sex comic. So it made me feel good. But then I go to these comic book conventions, and I put out my wares, and the generation that's buying comics had never heard of it, so I had to do a lot of explaining about what this strip was about. But everyone has struggled at some point. But people in comics tend to be artsy and tend to not have their dream jobs and have survival jobs instead and have these dreams of what they'd rather be doing. And so I found ways in to tap into what was going on in these strips that was timeless, that some people could relate to and maybe buy, or some young kids were into retro. They wanted to read something from the 80s because the 80s were cool.
Okay.
For the people who were familiar with the strip, the people who are my age, 40s and 50s, when they would come to the Prism booth and see Jason, they would say, "Oh, Jason, I remember that," and they would pick it up and flip through it and throw it back and say, "Oh, I've read all those stories," and they wouldn't buy it. So, but it inspired me to write new stories because I missed my characters, and it was nice to put these collections together and piece all the stories into some semblance of a continuity.
Yeah.
But in doing so, I'm like, man, I miss these characters. I want to tell more stories. so having formed this publishing imprint to publish these collections, I was inspired to tell new stories. And the first fruit of that labor was, because I also, as I mentioned, I was starting to do screenplays, and I liked working on that larger canvas. So I decided that I would start doing original graphic novels, and I would have a fully plotted story with a B plot, and for the first time I'd get to my supporting characters could have their own storylines and get their own they could get their own credit above the title.
Okay.
And of course the first person I had to give that to was Arena.
Of course.
So I started piecing together what became Jason Goes to Hollywood, and it's kind of a transition between standalone stories, which people who read my stories were used to seeing, and a full graphic novel. So the first couple of stories are more like warm-ups that reintroduce the characters and the basic relationships. And then the plot kicks in, and which eventually they get to Hollywood, but the plot and the inspiration for the story was what would happen if Arena's sister, who we met at the end of the 80s when they all during the big marriage, and I only ever used her once after that, but she was always on my mind somehow, and I was on a plane several years before this graphic novel took shape, and she just popped into my head, and she said, "You know, I'm a lesbian."
Hmm.
I'm like, no, I hadn't. Tell me more. And it made sense, but it's like it's not like I decided this. It's she came to me, and she came.
She
out.
Told you, yeah.
She told me, which is what the characters do. They live in my head, but I can't make them be who they're not or change. I can change their circumstances. I can say, what if this thing happened to them? But they react as who they are, right?
Right.
So Arena's sister came out to me, and then when she did so, she decided that because now that she's out, because she never likes people telling her how to live her life, that now she wants to have a baby. And so she decides that she wants Jason's baby. She wants his sperm. And that became the premise for this whole story, is that he turns her down, but when he does, she decides to chase down her second choice, who is Ed Rosenblatt, who is Jason and Arena's ex-boyfriend, who has flown the coop and moved to Hollywood to conquer Hollywood. And that's why they go there, to track him down and to stop her, Arena's sister, from getting to his sperm.
That's the whole story. That's the premise of the story.
Well, that's the premise of the story. Lots of crazy things happen, lots of surprises. Some people from the past re-enter that story. As you noted, it was very well received.
Yeah.
I was very happy to be telling original stories again, and it really started to catch on even among mainstream readers, because I'd always thought that I was writing for a mainstream audience, and of course that's why I was doing it wrong, I guess, right?
Right.
In the beginning, because I wasn't being, well, gay enough or something, at least the way I was being told to do it. I was on a panel once where it was all different kinds of creators, LGBT creators, doing all sorts of different things. And someone turned to me on that panel, I think it was actually the moderator, and said, "Well, Jeff, from what I've seen, you're doing gay comics for middle-aged straight housewives."
Oh.
And I'm like, really? I hadn't thought about that, but I guess that's one of my audiences. I certainly hope it's broader than that.
Yeah, it is, Jeff, and I I think we can pretty much say that with a lot of certainty. Gosh, Jeff, there is a whole list. I have like a whole list of all these other things that I want to talk about, which of course means you're going to have to come back on the show. Because
a two-parter.
We're going to have to do a two-parter.
Oh, and that's how you know when I'm doing a sci-fi story, by the way. It's a two-parter. Planet 69 was a two-parter.
See? That's how we
so
know.
Since I started doing graphic novels, I always have the comedic and the dramatic elements and all, but I always, thanks to Winston Leyland, I always like to introduce a sci-fi element into one of the stories. And in Jason Goes to Hollywood, it's the story called Jason Meets a Big Star, in which Jason and Arena, during their travels while they're trying to track down Ed, talk their way onto a movie set and become extras on a movie that is called Brutal Weapon 5, starring a megastar who may or may not be gay.
May or may not.
Rumors are floating around. Irina can't believe he's gay because she thinks he's hot.
Right.
Jason is convinced he's gay because, well, you know, they all are anyway, and because he's hot. Or used to be. He's a little aged at this point.
Okay.
This is Brutal Weapon 5. But they get hit by this shrink ray, and so they end up in his room, and they find out what he's into. And I will let readers must read the book to find out, but I won't spoil anything by telling you, yes, he is gay. But there's more to the story.
There's more
the
there.
The big reveal isn't that he's gay, because that's actually sort of obvious, but what he's into is the fascinating part of the story.
Okay.
But, of course, then the shrink ray wears off, and they get caught in his room. I can tell you that much.
There you go. Well, that's like
so
the... Yeah, go ahead.
I always try to include a sci-fi element, which I also did in the next graphic novel in this series, which is called Jason Gets a Job.
He does get a job. Well, I have to pause right here. Tell our listening audience how they can get their hands on these. I mean, not just entertaining, but also they are historic. You do have a sense that these are historic in their own way, right? That you really are a groundbreaker when it comes to this work.
Do I, or are you asking your audience?
I'm just telling you, you know what, I'm going to do it this way. I'm just going to tell you that that is true.
You know what, I do not have a sense of my place in history. Now that I'm being called a pioneer or an icon, I think those are just nice words for old.
That's not how I was saying them.
I'm just happy that I keep doing it, and I keep finding new stories to tell, and finding an audience that enjoys them.
Absolutely.
I never want to stop.
No, and we don't want you to, but tell everyone how they can get their hands on your work.
Well, a couple of ways. All the graphic novels and collections you could really just find on Amazon.com.
Great.
If you just type in Jason, and it's Jayson. We should probably talk about that sometime.
Definitely.
One of my many regrets, because everyone spells it wrong and then they can't find it. But if you type in Jayson and my name, Jaffrin, is Karell, everyone spells that wrong too. You can find all my books on Amazon.com. You can find everything I'm doing, including stuff that's not there, like the comic books and the DVD and ways to find my comics digitally on iTunes. If you just go, my company's name is Ignite Entertainment, and the URL is ignite-ent.com. If you just type that in, you can find it. But I think if you just do a Google search on my name.
And it comes right up.
And Jason with a Y.
With a Y.
I believe that my website is the first thing that comes up.
Well, we will certainly link to it. These are all the things. I'm just going to say, we didn't really even get to talk about Matt Crabtree, and he doesn't really like when people don't talk about him, so there's that. We really barely talked about the musical. We didn't get anywhere near German cartoonists, which is all to say that we need to have you back on the show. Are you okay with that?
Right. Of course.
Okay.
I knew that the musical would be a story unto itself, so I wanted to get through all the comic book stuff. And I can leave your readers. See how many print interviews I do? I can leave your listeners, unless this is being transcribed, then someone might read it. My readers, your listeners, with this tease, the next book in the series is going to be called Jason Gets Married.
That's exciting. That's a great tease. That was a good tease there, Jeff.
Yes.
That was
so
good.
More to come.
More to come. More definitely to come. Well, look, I don't expect you to articulate to everyone, yes, I am a pioneer, yes, I'm an icon, but I'm telling you, I have been following Jason for such a long time, and what I really love, too, is reading reviews from other people who had you and your work as an outlet when there really weren't any other outlets in this medium present. And that you have persisted and that you continue to put out original content when so many of these other strips have gone away, and indeed so many publications have gone away. It is so inspiring, Jeff. And my hope is that you know what a difference that you make in just putting your voice out there the way that you do it.
Oh, well, thank you so much for that. I just want to entertain. And I entertain myself, and it's an escape from my reality still today, as it was from the very beginning. And I just I love my characters, and I love spending more time in their world and then sharing it with people. So I'm grateful that I continue to have that opportunity.
Absolutely. Jeff Krell, what an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I look forward to... See, this is going to be a three-parter.
It's going to... Easily.
We're going to talk about the musical. We didn't even really get into the Christmas stuff.
No, and we're going to provide links to that because everyone needs to go check out Jason's Christmas party.
Ignite-ant.com. You can find my brand-new Christmas comic, which has a new lead story and collects up all the old Christmas stories I did over the years and some gems, some rarities, including a strip from the first year of the Philadelphia Gay News that has never seen print again until now. And, of course, there's the DVD of Jason's Christmas Party based on the story I did in the 90s. And you can also find that on YouTube if you just type in Jason with a Y.
With a Y.
Jason's Christmas Party. It should be the first thing that comes up. And I encourage everyone to check it out because it's certainly something we'd like to do more of. If people like it, we'd like to do some kind of maybe web series of animated shorts.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I'm for any Christmas story that has a Hanukkah bush. As a gay Jew, I enjoy it immensely. Suffice to say, Jeff, more to talk about and certainly more to come. Thank you so much for doing everything you're doing.
My pleasure. I look forward to the next interview in our series.
Well, pretty merry sunlight, she's all right with me. Pretty merry sunlight, she's everything I need. Some people sit around and they watch the world go by. They just don't know the fun they're missing. People see me happy and they sometimes ask me why. I tell them girls were made for kissing. But I don't need to look around, 'cause I'm in heaven since I found my pretty Mary sunlight. She's all right with me. Pretty Mary sunlight, she's everything I need. Pretty Mary sunlight, she turns the night to day. Pretty Mary sunlight, don't ever go away. Some people spend their whole lives chasing after dreams. Dreams I guess they never will believe in. Playing foolish games, inventing fairy tales and schemes, building fantasies that will deceive them. But I don't need to look around, 'cause I'm in the heaven since I found my pretty Mary sunlight. She's all right with me, son. Pretty Mary sunlight.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, not a ton of time left on this week's episode, so definitely want to throw some LGBT news out at you. I'm going to fly solo on this one. Becca will be back with us actually in 2 weeks, because next week I will be home in New York City in the New Jersey area, and my hope is that my folks will be on next week's episode. I haven't told them yet. We'll find out together. Very exciting stuff. They haven't been on in many, many years. But quickly, some news for you. We must pause right here and acknowledge November 20th, which every single year is Transgender Day of Remembrance. Nearly every 2 weeks, a person is killed somewhere in the world for expressing gender nonconformity. This sobering statistic does not include the numerous other deaths that never receive media attention or are not reported to the police, making the full scope of lives lost to senseless anti-trans prejudice truly, truly, truly innumerable. Transgender Remembrance, this is the 15th anniversary of the first one, which was held in Austin, Massachusetts, to memorialize Rita Hester, who is a trans woman of color whose life was tragically cut short in 1999. Over the years, the now international project has cataloged the loss of hundreds of trans and gender nonconforming people who faced attackers wielding slurs, weapons, and fists. Some were killed by intimate partners, some by strangers, while still others were children slain by parents who were intolerant of their gender variants. I will say advocate.com really has a great slate of articles right now up there on trans issues, on Transgender Day of Remembrance, some Throwback Thursdays to some notable trans folks. They have an article called These 48 Trans Women and Men Changed the World. There is an incredible op-ed called Why We Still Need Transgender Day of Remembrance, so definitely go check that out. So really do what you can. We always start with educating yourself. I don't have nearly enough time on this episode, and certainly not enough time on every single episode to talk about trans issues. I would love to just do a show just on trans issues, because there's a startling lack of that voice out there, even in the podcast world. So you got to do what you can do first to go educate yourself so that you can have a conversation with other people. That's step two. Step two is to talk to other people. But for step one, you want to make sure you know what you're talking about. So get out there, learn about Transgender Day of Remembrance, and learn all about our trans brothers and sisters and the struggles that they face, because they are enormous and they need our voice as well. So there's that. Over in the NBA, some sports news for you. Jason Collins, the first openly gay player in the NBA, he is now retired. 35-year-old center Jason Collins announced his retirement from the NBA this week after 13 seasons in the league. He became the first openly gay active NBA player and the first openly gay man to play in any of the four major sports leagues in the United States when he publicly came out on the cover of Sports Illustrated last April. He played for seven NBA franchises over the course of his career. He signed with the Brooklyn Nets the following winter, and he played 22 games for coach Jason Kidd. In a column for Sports Illustrated, Collins wrote that although he broke a barrier for gay athletes, there is still work to be done before coming out won't be such a big deal. This was a quote from him. It had been argued that no team would want to take on a player who was likely to attract a media circus from the outset and whose sexuality would be a distraction. I'm happy to have helped put those canards to rest. There are still no publicly gay players in the NFL, NHL, or Major League Baseball. Believe me, they exist. Every pro sport has them. I know some of them personally. When we get to the point where a gay pro athlete is no longer forced to live in fear that he'll be shunned by teammates or outed by tabloids, when we get to the point where he plays while his significant other waits in the family room, when we get to the point where he's not compelled to hide his true self and is able to live an authentic life, then coming out won't be such a big deal. But we're not there yet. That is a quote from groundbreaking athlete Jason Collins, who has just retired from the NBA at 35 years old. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to his family on a well-deserved career. Well-deserved career. Very cool. Montana. Over in Montana, of all places, a federal judge has just overturned Montana's same-sex marriage ban, making Montana the 34th state in the nation to allow such unions. U.S. District Court Judge Brian Morris's order was effective immediately. He said, quote, Montana no longer can deprive plaintiffs and other same-sex couples of the chance to marry their loves. The court recognizes that not everyone will celebrate this outcome. He went on to say this decision overturns a Montana constitutional amendment approved by the voters of Montana, yet the United States Constitution exists to protect disfavored minorities from the will of the majority. He had one more quote. This judge keeps going. These are great quotes. Quote, the time has come for Montana to follow all the other states within the Ninth Circuit and recognize laws that ban same-sex marriage violate the constitutional right of same-sex couples to equal protection of the laws. So, we are up to 34 states. I do not live in one of them, and I know that I say that every week, and Becca and I even talked about that last week, but it's still kind of hard to accept to have moved from Vermont, the bastion of gay marriage, the oasis, the Mecca, the place where gay marriages, you know, were essentially born, and now I'm in Ohio, which is now one of the 16 states to not have gay marriage. And by the way, that number's getting even less. Mississippi, of all places, a challenge to Mississippi's ban on same-sex marriage was heard in federal court. The lawsuit seeks marriage recognition for two lesbian couples, one of whom is legally married in Maine. Mississippi officials are defending the ban, which was approved by voters in 2004 as a constitutional amendment. So even Mississippi is looking to join the vast, vast majority of states that allow marriage for people of the same sex. And I live in Ohio. And Ohio is one of the only two states in the whole country where a judge has said no. It's kind of a bummer. It's not very motivating. Not very motivating at all. I will give the update that the ordinance that Becca and I talked about last week that would allow more protections for our trans brothers and sisters, it did indeed pass here in Cleveland. So that's very exciting. So there definitely is movement. I do not want to say that all is for naught here in Ohio because there's stuff happening, but not marriage equality. And yet in Montana, the treasure state, listeners will recall, I did my sixth grade project on Montana. I love Montana. It's the treasure state. Very conservative place there in open sky Montana. But yeah, they now have marriage equality. Not so much here in Ohio. It hurts me. It hurts me, folks. Now, all is not rosy on the marriage equality front over in Michigan, and this story is just, oh, this one hurts. This one hurts. The Attorney General of Michigan filed a court document last week arguing that a federal appeals court ruling upholding the state's marriage ban voids about 300 same-sex marriage. The plaintiffs in the marriage case that led to the ruling on Monday sought review from the Supreme Court. So again, this is a federal appeals court that upheld that state marriage ban, and they just effectively voided 300 same-sex marriages. Can you imagine? You're one of those folks who celebrated that with your partner. You celebrated that with your spouse, with your family, and your friends. And then you hear, I would imagine that not everyone was there at the court ruling, so maybe you hear through social media, or you hear from a reporter, or you hear from a friend or a family member, hey, by the way, there's a court that just voided your marriage. Now, obviously, in your heart, you're still married. But this is the government saying, oh, by the way, no, you're not. You're not. So that's hard for those couples in Michigan, and hopefully some action will happen there. The plaintiffs in marriage cases in Ohio and Tennessee last week, they've now asked the Supreme Court to take up their cases. The Supreme Court this week received similar petitions for cases, those out of Michigan and also out of Kentucky. A federal appeals court earlier this month upheld marriage bans in all four of those states. So again, the whole direction of all of this is towards the Supreme Court. Justice Clarence Thomas, last week he criticized the Supreme Court's refusal to review lower court decisions in favor of marriage equality in a statement attached to the denial of a stay of a lower court decision. Clarence Thomas called the unlikeliness of at least four justices to review the case unfortunate. So that's the question, is whether the Supreme Court will continue to not review any of these cases, which earlier was great because it allowed marriage equality in all those states, but now that would be really bad because in Ohio and Tennessee and Michigan and Kentucky, who are asking for the Supreme Court to say, hey, by the way, can you overturn these courts that are saying that we can't get married? So if the Supreme Court doesn't take up those cases, then all of those rulings stand and marriage equality will not happen in any of those states. So all eyes on the Supreme Court of the United States. And that, my friends, is about as much time as we have for this week's episode. Our huge, huge thanks to Jeff Krell, Jason the Comic. That's Jason with a Y. It's out there. You guys should check it out. I love living history. It's not just a comic that happened in the 80s or 90s. He is still going with it. And again, it gives so many folks access to the LGBT community who are looking for it in the wonderful world of comics where representation is not always present. So our thanks to Jeff Krell. On next week's show, I have such a special Thanksgiving show for you. I am so excited for you to hear it. I've actually already recorded it. We did a little recording in advance so that I could put out a new episode as I go home for Thanksgiving. And it is a woman that I have encountered on my journey through this life. And I met her out in California, and I am so excited for you to hear from her. I got very choked up during this interview. So I'm excited for you to hear that next week during our Thanksgiving week special. But for now, you guys know what to do. Get out there, go educate yourself, go learn about your trans brothers and sisters, and then pass on that information to someone else. Start up a dialogue because we need more voices all over the place. Get out there and make a difference and use your own voice. And remember, while you're out there using your voice and making a difference, why be gay when you can be so gay?